All you timeless children with your predictions and flashbacks, trying to get ahead. What makes you think I can see you? What makes you think I believe you? Dreams inside my bed. Have you heard the family music stepping up wailing? Shot, it's from the past. All the dreams are flying, all the thoughts are dying. Heard, it's from the past.
Welcome to the Prediction Trade, the weekly podcast that searches out mispriced opportunities in event futures and prediction markets, whether it be stocks, sports, elections, political results, weather, pop culture, whatever the outcome may be. If there's a market for it, if you can trade it, if you can buy it and bet on it, you can bet we're going to talk about it on the Prediction Trade. I'm Jeff Joseph. I'm the editorial director of Luckbox Magazine. I'm always joined by my co-host, Garrett Baldwin. Garrett's an economist, an active market trader. He's the editor at large of Luckbox Magazine as well. Hi, Garrett.
Hey, Jeff. How you doing today?
Good to have you with you. Good to have you with us. Excuse me. And of course, I'm always joined by Mike Reddy. He's the brains behind this production. He's the producer. He's the editor of Luckbox as well. He runs the Prediction Trade column, and we affectionately refer to him as The Voice. Hi, Mike. What do we have in store today?
Hey, Jeff, and hey, Garrett. Well, today we're going to be talking with Predictit co-founder John Phillips about the prediction markets, the midterms, and some broader trends in the political landscape.
And that's why we call him The Voice. Well, let's get started. Before we do that, and we're looking forward to having John, we had him on season one and season two of the Prediction Trade podcast, and we're looking forward to his updates on Predictit, of course, the premier, the OG political betting platform. But before we bring John on, let's revisit some of our trades that are open right now. Last week, we had Scott Supak, a very active Predictit.org trader as well. He shared with us the Biden approval market, presidential approval market trading strategy that he uses. We saw a little uptick in the Biden approval rating in the markets that just closed last week. And Scott shared his specific strategy on how he bets those underlying brackets and tranches. But let's take a look at our open trades. Garrett, let's go over to you. You kicked us off with some MLB trades on season over-unders. The season's underway. What can you tell us about the three teams that you identified?
Well, unfortunately, because I live down in southwestern Florida, I couldn't watch any of the Orioles games against Tampa, and that's actually a good thing, being an Orioles fan. They lost all three of those games to start the season. They are who we thought they are. They can't hit worth anything, but the pitching's holding up. They're 1-3 to start the year. Remember, the under four wins at 61.5. I think they're going to be lucky to get to 55 this year. Meanwhile, on the Twins and the Mariners, on both of the overs, the 81.5 on the Twins and the Mariners, Mariners at 83.5. They're both 2-2. Well, that's because they played each other in a four-game series, splitting it. Both of them have relatively tough Aprils, but it does get a little bit easier as we head into the summer months. So if there is a little bit of a pullback here, there is opportunity still to get in on Twins and Mariners on the over. Again, we might see that pull back a little bit on places like DraftKings or FanDuel. I would take advantage.
Well, it looks like you're off to a good start with the three teams you identify. That's the Orioles under and overs with the Twins and the Mariners over 81.5 and 83.5 games, respectively. We'll also revisit for a moment the Georgia gubernatorial primary on the GOP side. A couple weeks ago, we talked about how Kemp, despite his opponent, Dave Perdue, being endorsed by the former President Trump, that Kemp was going to be a lockbox trade. We talked about that trade at 71 cents. It's now trading at 79 cents. Looks like a solid trade, and we're still holding. And we'll move on to the interest rate market, which, Garrett, you brought up another lockbox trade that you identified. That was specifically in the July 2022 meeting of the Fed. And the result of that meeting, you looked at the over 125 market, which was then trading at 73 cents. It's a good trade. You called it a lockbox trade too. It's trading at 84 to 90 cents right now. So our open trades on the lockbox side are doing really well. What can you tell us as an update on that market?
Well, I think if you look at the CPI number right now, inflation's running a lot hotter than expectations, or at least what we've been told. But that, with that in mind, the key thing moving forward is we looked at the CME FedWatch tool, right? And we saw that the markets expected higher than that 1.25. Expectations for May are a 50 basis point increase. You get into that June meeting, and now we start talking about 75. That's going to put you above that 125 number. Just one simple rate hike of 25 basis points in July would push it. To be honest with you, Jeff, now we got to start having a conversation about the 1.5 in July as well.
It's a market we need to look at, and we'll get more of an indication tomorrow when the PPI number posts as well. Last night, over on another platform at Kalshi, there was an inflation market that specifically was there for the taking. It had an over-under at 1.1% on a month-over-month inflation number for the CPI. The number came in today, this morning, up 1.2%. So that was 48 cents last night, and that will resolve as a yes at a dollar, a good half day's trade for those who put it on. So that's what our open portfolio of trades looks like. But we also have an open guest sitting to join us. Again, it's great to have John Phillips back. John is really the OG when it comes to prediction markets, particularly political prediction markets. He is the CEO of Aristotle, which is a political data and technology firm that's bipartisan, serving all sorts of campaigns and social campaigns as well as political campaigns on the data side. But he's also the person that brought the Predictit platform to America, which is now the premier platform for wagering on political outcomes. So, John, thanks for joining us again. How are you?
Very well. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks for having me on. Hello, Garrett.
Good morning.
And I know you have some biotech trading conversations to do later on that you can pick up on, but let's get back to the subject at hand. You know, John, we recently, on season 3 of the Prediction Trade, we came back on the Tasty Trade Network. And Tasty Trade Financial, of course, is a large financial network. It has millions of watchers and also has a large YouTube channel. So as opposed to the strictly political gamblers, political wagerers that use the predicted market, we have a much larger audience now of predominantly financial market traders who are used to options trading and the Tasty Trade methodology and that platform over at Tastyworks. And they may not be familiar with prediction markets in general. So let's start from the beginning and give us a brief short history about Predictit, when it started and where it is now, what it looks like now.
Sure. Thanks. And thanks for having me on. I've been looking forward to this. And have been following your growth and evolution as well. Very exciting. So Predictit is an outgrowth of a project at Victoria University of Wellington, New Zealand, which is a large university that had been running a prediction market for 6 or 7 years before 2014, at which point we teamed up with them to bring it to the United States. Permission was granted by the Commodities Future Trading Commission to open Predictit in the U.S. It's intended as a research project, but it's also lively and it's grown a great deal. Today there are approximately 100,000 traders who have some money in their accounts on Predictit. About 250,000 more who've opened accounts but not funded them yet. There are literally more than 1 billion shares traded every year on Predictit, and these are all $1 winner-take-all contracts, as you know, Jeff. It's the winner, $1 of the prediction or the forecast, that pays it a dollar. And the price fluctuates by the minute, by the second, by the day, by the week, based upon what the market thinks the odds of an event occurring are. So we simply match someone who thinks something's going to happen with somebody who doesn't think it's going to happen. And the price that each of them pays for that position, which, if correct, pays out at a dollar, varies based upon what the market thinks it should be.
And a couple things to pick up on that, just for our newer listeners. So you're referring to something that's often referred to as binary options, and binary options trade between 1 cent and 99 cents. And they settle either at zero or at a dollar. And you don't have to hold the position to its outcome. So if you are betting on Joe Biden to become the Democratic presidential nominee in 2024, you can trade that. You don't have to hold it all the way to election day. You can trade in and out of it because it's a liquid market. As you said, billions of shares are traded each day. So you have traders that are making political predictions that are betting on final outcomes, but you also have those who are taking advantage of liquid markets and looking for mispriced opportunities, which is all we do on this podcast, and also buying and selling within those markets. What can you tell us about the average trader? What's the demographic of those 100,000 active traders that are on your site right now?
Oh, that's a great question. So we've actually just completed some in-depth market research, some focus groups, and then some more quantitative research. And I can give you the broad outlines because we're still digesting the numbers. Predicted traders are interested in making a buck. They're in it for the money. But they're also, there's an interesting secondary reason why they're doing it. They educate themselves more about these markets when they have a little bit of skin in the game. That should come as no surprise to you guys. If you're betting on a sporting event, you're going to consume those statistics voraciously, or at least more so than somebody who's just a passive observer of the game. The betting's not for everybody, but for predicted traders, they're in it because they're interested. They have some interest in political events, but they're by no means, hyper partisans, all of them. Some of them are. Some of them are very involved and passionate about politics, but many of them are more interested in sharpening and honing their forecasting skills, whether it's about who's going to be the nominee of the Democratic and the Republican Party, where there's a lot of trading right now. Or it has something to do with who's going to be elected president of France. And predicted traders told us in the market research, yes, it's about making money, but it's also about being more engaged and becoming better informed.
Well, how many markets do you have on the platform right now?
Or typically? So they're more than, yeah, so right now they're more than 200. Generally, it'll come somewhere between 200 and 300 different markets. There's all variety. It is oriented. Predicted is oriented towards political events. So you can have, it's not just elections. It can have see Supreme Court appointments, that sort of thing. But it's really focused on political events. And it's global in scope. So all the traders right now are U.S. traders. But the markets that they can forecast on transcend that.
And we're looking at your platform right now at predicted.org. And you can see the extent of the markets, everything from who will be the presidential nominee on the GOP side, Democratic side, what the balance of the House or Senate will be as a result of the next election, will Biden resign during his first term, what the Senate breakdown is going to be, and then state by state, who's going to win the Senate seat, the governor's position, the representative's position. All these markets are active. Of course, the most active market appears to be the GOP 2024 presidential nominee that has 25 million shares traded to date thus far. That raises an interesting question. You obviously have some great liquidity and the platform continues to grow year after year. At what point do you consider a market to be sufficiently liquid? You obviously experiment with markets. I've even seen house district markets on your platform that gets really narrow, right? That really gets down into kind of some micro opportunities within a state. At what point, how much liquidity do you like to see in a market that shows that it's really viable and getting traction among your traders?
Well, so that's an interesting question. So, you get two traders who are willing to place a wager on a particular event occurring. That's fine by us. But in terms of the accuracy of the forecast, which is one of the things that these universities are studying, I neglected to mention, since 2014 with Victoria University, which is the anchor sponsor for Predicted, we've added more than 100 other universities and research centers which get the anonymized trading data from us with which to do their research or to use in their educational program. So, for instance, West Point uses Predicted data for their teaching for teaching purposes, whereas other universities are using it for research purposes. And one of the research purposes, it gets to your question, which is, why are markets as accurate in making forecasts as they are? Why are they more accurate than polling frequently? And what happens when a market is off? when something unexpectedly happens, when there's a black swan event, for instance, that's unanticipated by the market. So these there's a different standard, Jeff, for what makes for an interesting trade, because if we can put a buyer and a seller together on a particular trade, bingo, that's fine. And as you say, they can trade in and out so long as there's somebody else to take that position, or they can maintain their position until the event occurs. But in terms of the accuracy of the market or the accuracy of the forecast, you want to get more traders in there. Now, at some point, it depends on the nature of the trade. You mentioned some of the really micro markets or micro trades, like, you know, primary results. Well, it depends. I mean, the Alaska election, now that Palin's jumped in, is going to be a fascinating election to watch. And you know, how accurate it is going to depend. We'll have to take a look.
We're going to talk about the Alaska election later on in this segment, but let me ask you another question, or at least make a note here. You referred to the academic evidence that shows that prediction markets are material in terms of their forecasting ability, and that recalls some of the work of Justin Wolfers. I forget what university he's from, but I think it was
University
one
of Michigan.
From Michigan, who were earlier one of the early people who noted that there is a strong correlation between what the prediction markets post as their pricing and the actual percentage probability of that outcome to occur. And what we mean by that is, if you're looking at this platform for the first time, and of course, if you're watching us on the YouTube, you can see on the screen what the predicted market looks like, and you're always invited to join this podcast on the YouTube channel over TastyTrade. But you'll see that all these, the pricing is reflected in pennies, but that equates essentially to a percentage. So if you looked at the GOP 2024 presidential nominee, Donald Trump is leading that market right now at 38 cents. And that essentially is a market saying the consensus of that crowd-based forecast is there's a 38% probability that Donald Trump will end up being the Republican nominee for president. And Ron DeSantis follows him at 29 cents, which equates to about 29%. So that's the real value here. It's not just for investors, traders, wagers, but probability geeks find a wealth of information over on your platform, particularly if they're interested in political outcomes.
Sure. And it's also real interesting how, when new information comes into the market, you know, something happens, there's a gaffe, or there's a particularly strong debate performance, how those odds will fluctuate. You know, this doesn't say that Donald Trump's going to get 38% of the vote, as you point out. Mm-hmm. This says that it's 30%, the market is ascribing 38% odds that he's going to be the Republican nominee.
It's been interesting to look at the, you know, obviously a lot of focus on the U.S. economy, U.S. elections, but it's been interesting to look at the world. You have 23 world markets open right now, and you could see how there's so much of a correlation relationship between some of these different events. So you have the next G20 leader coming out, the Boris Johnson has gone up 2 cents, yet on the bet on whether or not he stays as PM through May, it came down 2 cents. The relationships between these are very, very interesting. Do you see a lot of your the users on Predicted trading across all of these different bets at the same time, or they really just tend to hone in on just one?
Well, that's a good question also. So traders, you know, there's more than one way to play, you know, the presidential race. You can think, you can forecast that you can like the odds for DeSantis and not necessarily hate the odds for Trump. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can love DeSantis at 28 cents and hate DeSantis at 45 cents, and you can get in and get out based upon what's happening that day or that week or that month. Or you can take a long-term approach to it. But there are other ways to bet on DeSantis. You can bet no on a number of the other candidates in the field, for instance, that they will never be the nominee, and you can take that position as well. It's another way to, if that's your opinion, which is your estimate, which is that DeSantis has a better than reflected odds for getting the nomination. And of course, this changes, right?
Yes, absolutely. And it's been interesting because we've been following some of the global trades as well, focusing on, will Putin still be president in 2022? Looking at the next European leader out, Boris Johnson has now moved up. I actually forgot that Mario Draghi was obvious. It was still in charge of Italy. I mean, that's just how much is going on in the world today that, you know, that completely slipped off my radar. So to see that, to see him, you know, in line with Boris Johnson, you know, if you came into this without a whole lot of information, you see that Draghi, who isn't generating as many headlines as Johnson is right now, that the prediction market's effectively calling it even on who would be the next person out in the European European right. leadership.
Right.
Well, in your unique position, John, having access to this data and also the other work you do, the nonpartisan work you do as a technology stack for campaigns, what can you tell us about what you're seeing as broader macro trends, particularly as we approach midterms coming up in November, which is going to be a real busy time for you and the Predicted platform, to be certain. But what are some of the broader demographic and voting trends that you're seeing that traders should be aware of?
Well, I mean, so just of immediate interest to people right now is what is the impact of the Trump endorsement, right? I mean, that says worlds about where politics is today. Mm. And it also is reflective, I think, or predictive in some way, if you follow this, in terms of what's going to happen in November of 2022, and then, of course, it's all about 2024. So that's one thing to keep an eye on. Do these Trump endorsees do better or worse than one would expect? And by one would expect, of course, we mean what the forecast is in the prediction markets, or what the pollsters are saying, or the pundits on TV. Another trend I would look at, so I would look at that, because that has some bearing on what's going to happen in 2024. It also has some bearing on you know, will Trump run again? We can say it doesn't matter, but it does matter. If Trump endorsees those that Trump is supporting do well or don't do well, in terms of how other Republicans in the field are going to consider the wisdom of their affinity or closeness to proximity to Trump on the campaign trail. Another thing you look at is, you know, what's going to happen with the, you know, it certainly looks to me as if there's a strong headwind against the Democrats going into 2022. And this may have, you know, I don't think you can overestimate the importance of what happened in Virginia and New Jersey to a lesser extent. These issues like education are going to be very salient for voters who may have supported Biden in 2020, but when, you know, in 2022, Biden is not on the ballot. It really has to do with some of these issues that voters are steamed about, and I think you're going to take a look at that. More broadly speaking, looking into 2024. Certainly what happens in 2022 is going to be important in terms of control of the House and the Senate, but, you know, presidential elections are, generally speaking, determined by, you know, four factors in terms of who's going to win. One is, and three of those factors, by the way, the candidate has no control over. So one of the three is the economy. You know, really, the economy is something that the guy sitting in the White House or the person wishing to sit in the White House, they have no control over that in the near term in terms of what's going to happen in spite of the rhetoric. So one of these things you have no control over is the economy. The second thing you have no control over is foreign affairs. You know, the what's going to happen in Ukraine, what's going to happen elsewhere, and October surprises. There's no control over that as well. The one thing that candidates do have control over, the only thing they have control over, really, is the quality of the campaign they run. Remember, I skipped one. The other thing you have no control over as a candidate for president is who your opponent's going to be. Mm. Right? You've got no say in who the other side's going to pick to put up against you. But you do have control over the quality of the campaign you run. And I would say, of all those four factors, the quality of the campaign is probably the least important, even though it's the one you have the most ability to influence as a candidate for president. So, you know, we're looking at a highly volatile 2024 election. As you point out, there's a lot of betting on who the Republican nominee is going to be as we get towards the debates. and the beauty contests that take place when you get this cattle call of the Republican candidates on stage. That will be interesting to watch. There will be a lot of transactions unpredicted around that. Who makes a gaffe? How many times certain subjects are going to be brought up? It's going to be fascinating.
It'd be fun to watch. The New York Times had an interesting story a couple of days ago. Maybe it was only within the last 2 days. And a headline from that story was that the GOP sees an opening with black voters. And quoting from that, it said rising inflation, stratospheric gas prices, lingering frustrations over COVID and new anxieties over the war in Ukraine. Republicans see a fresh opening after the Obama and Trump eras to peel away some black voters whose polls show increasing disenchanted with the Biden administration. Are you seeing that in your data as well? Or is that a trend? There's been a talk about Hispanic voting shifts towards the GOP as well. Is that something that's bubbling up on your end?
Well, we as you point out, we're nonpartisan, so we have candidates all across the spectrum and advocacy groups and trade associations and the like who are seeking to influence events at the ballot box. And there certainly is an emphasis on and a lot of attention being paid to minority, but in particular Hispanic voters. Asian Americans are also being closely watched in terms of where they find a home in the American political party system. But you can't underestimate the importance of turnout in the 2022 election. And if those soft voters, soft Biden voters, Democratic voters stay home or flip to the other side, it's a mountain of heartbreak for the Democrats who are on the ballot. On the other hand, it's a lifetime between now and November.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
And the quality of the candidates that the Republicans put up is going to be very significant. There's been a lot of criticism of that by the political insiders, but we'll see.
Yeah, complicating the potential for Democratic turnout with low engagement with the current administration. There's some numbers that came out of the Brennan Center yesterday. It's a bipartisan group that noted in 2020, white voters came out, 70.9% of white voters participated in the 2020 election, while only 62.6% of black voters and only 53.7% of Latino voters. So I think that's going to be a real, I think a lot of the game's going to be played right there in trying to increase engagement and turnout among minority voters as well. Well, John, when we mentioned that you were going to be joining us on the show, a bunch of predicted traders who, they're a cult in their own right, wanted to make sure we put one of the questions in front of you was, obviously midterms and general elections are a busy, busy time for you. And with the growth of the Predicted platform over the last 4 or 5 years, you had two major cycles where you had to deal with enormous trading volume, which is, of course, materially more than the normal course of events. And we're speaking specifically about election night. During those nights, there were some glitches, both in the midterms and the prior general election. There's always the question as to what's the latest work that's been done on the technology stack to be able to be prepared for the type of volume that inevitably is going to be showing up on midterm election night coming up in November?
Sure. And thank you for bringing that up. So since 2020, we've made significant investments in the technology behind Predicted. And we've had a chance to do a dry run. Not many people know that Aristotle, in addition to being a nonpartisan data provider and the parent company which incubated Predicted with Victoria University, Aristotle is also one of the leading companies in the identity verification and compliance space. So we've had a chance to test drive some of what we do with Super Bowl, for instance, and March Madness, because a lot of the sports betting companies utilize Aristotle for their know your customer, customer onboarding, that sort of thing. So we've had an opportunity to test drive some of this, but clearly we had to make some significant improvements. We've gone with Cloudflare for some of the security functions that we have, you know, we get thousands of attempts to hack the system daily. And using a world-class security system like Cloudflare helps us manage that in conjunction with other many other companies and government agencies and the like that are relying on them for this purpose. So that's been very helpful. We've also, you know, moved to Azure so we can more dynamically adapt to what the load is. And then the third thing is just, you know, testing and testing and testing. As I say, we don't wait until the, you know, we're not waiting for the 2022 midterms of the 2024 general election to see if these systems can withstand. You know, the Super Bowl betting is humongous, as you guys know, and the ability to just process that number of customer onboards is significant. So we're confident we've done what we need to do, but we have more work to do. There's no doubt about it.
One last question. We talked about demographics a few moments ago. I was reading something from the AARP that came out on the 6th saying that women over 50 have never really decided which candidates to support until the last minute. Only 17% of women in that voting block have made up their mind for the election in 2022. 65% will not make their decisions until weeks or just days before the election. So the question is, does that, you know, what type of volatility might we expect from some of these types of voting blocks and or some of these types of votes? And then is that common to see that level, 65% in a particular voting block saying that they're not going to make up that mind? Because that is a lot of time. But that obviously, if Republicans have, you know, what is perceived to be a big lead, they could definitely screw up in the months ahead. We've seen this happen on both sides of the aisle in the past.
Sure. So it is common for certain demographic groups to disproportionately reserve judgment until the very end. And we call them, you know, late deciders, which seems to be an apropos description. In the political business, we also talk about something called the ballot question. And the ballot question is, you try to figure out in advance of the election what is going to be on the voter's mind when they walk into that polling booth, pull the curtain, and cast their ballot. What is is this going to be a referendum on Biden? Is this going to be a referendum on Trump? Is this going to be a referendum on the economy? And which of these demographic groups? Now, that AARP study is so interesting because it nails it down to, you know, to the demographic that you mentioned, women plus 50. But there will be other subsets, and you know, our business is to dice and splice and find out where those subsets are and who's gettable for a particular candidate or cause or advocacy group. And then Katie bar the doors. It's been determined that you're in a late decider group, you can expect to see a lot of political rhetoric in the days leading up to the election, even as you're literally driving to the polls this election cycle.
Well, thank you for that insight, John. Because you mentioned the Alaska market and the nationalizations of elections, we're going to ask you to stick around now because we're going to move into our topic segment and get your take on a hot market over at predictit.org. What we're going to move on to is the Alaska market and what can only be viewed as a as a gift from the heavens for Tina Fey. Sarah Palin is returning to politics with an April Fool's announcement that she'll be running in the primary for an Alaska House seat that was vacated by the last March's passing of Don Young, who was 88 years old, the longest serving representative in Congress, passed away. And she just announced on April Fool's that she's going to be in that primary. It's an interesting primary, and Mike's pulled it up for us for those watching along on video. This is going to be a ranked choice structure, which we love to see, actually. I think it adds a lot of dimension, and not to mention we think it's good for democracy. But Sarah Palin is in front of the market currently, which is defined as who will win the 2022 Alaska at-large special election. Sarah Palin today is at 44 cents, and right behind her is Nick Begich III. Begich is from a well-known Democratic political family in Alaska, but he is running essentially as a Republican. Tara Sweeney's in the third spot at 16 cents. And it's an interesting race because no one appears to be pretty popular. Politico did a story just a couple days ago just citing that even though Sarah Palin's a well-known name on the national stage, she's not particularly that popular in her own home state. In fact, her approval ratings in Alaska, according to the most recent poll, is 37% have a favorable view of Palin, while 51% view her negatively, despite Donald Trump's endorsement. So the subject that you brought up as and the power of Trump's endorsement to be something to watch, and something that Garrett and I and Mike spoke about a couple of weeks ago when we were looking at the Georgia race with Perdue and Kemp, that's going to be very important to watch. Trump has come out and endorsed Palin. That's why she's probably in the lead at 44 cents, but she's not particularly popular in her home state, and neither are some of the other candidates. Only, let's see, Gross similarly had a 32% favorable rating, 51% unfavorable, and probably the most favorable rating of the leading candidates is Begich, who is only has a 30% unfavorable rating. And what I'm also not speaking to is a host of other candidates. There's as many as 50 candidates that have filed for this ranked choice voting primary, including a Democratic socialist named Santa Claus, who currently serves as the mayor pro tempore of North Pole, Alaska. So this is definitely going to be one to watch.
Good one there. Good
yeah,
one.
It's, and I don't know why Santa Claus.
He's been saving that joke. He's been saving that joke.
It's true. We don't know why Santa Claus doesn't show up among the candidates you can bet on in Alaska.
What's his favorable rating? Yeah,
it's a good question. But, well, first of all, Garrett, any thoughts about this election? Have you been taking a close look at it? I do have a call here, and I have an open position on this that I'll share in a moment. But what's your thoughts?
Well, this is like the high school class president election from hell, in my view. But Alaska's going to be doing what is known as a jungle primary. So that's the top four primary. There's multiple candidates from multiple parties. And I actually like this type of primary because typically what we see, particularly in various states, the way the primary systems are set up, the more extreme candidates have been winning over the last 12 years as they have individual primary parties. So we'll see if the people of Alaska all come together and kind of move into the middle and focus on, you know, somebody who may be a little bit more on the moderate side. But looking at this, there's a couple of things. One, Palin did quit when she was governor. I'm not necessarily sure that a lot of people have forgotten about that up in Alaska. The second thing here is that out of that list, and I think you and I are going to come into agreement on this, the disapproval is as important as the approval. Her disapproval is at 51%. And Begich, he doesn't necessarily have the name recognition. He's at about 28-31 split, but you've got time. You have two different elections coming up. I believe the first is in June and the second one is in August. So there's time. There's definitely time to build name recognition. And again, this she kind of came out of the box with the name recognition that obviously, everybody would envy, but that does not necessarily mean strength into the longer term. I'm with you when you announce your pick.
Well, I want to jump over and get John's take on this, but I want to point out something that you just mentioned because you're speaking to the national perception of this local market when you speak to the name recognition. Sure, Begich is an unknown name nationally, but he's really well known in Alaska. That's a well-established Democratic political family, and that's why these markets, John. You know, as active traders and financial people ourselves who really look for mispriced opportunities, that's what the opportunities are that Predicted offers at times. There's a national perception that's driving this market right now. Palin's name recognition. Begich isn't known by the national audience, but he's extremely well known in Alaska. And he's from a family that's very admired in Alaska politically. So there's probably an arbitrage opportunity that's probably speaking to some mispriced opportunities. That's why my specific trade here, and I have an open position, I bought Begich in the low 20s and I'll sell them in the high 20s. I'll do the same with Palin. I'll buy her in the low 40s and I'll sell her in the high 40s. Not holding a trade to the outcome. I think this is a trading market. That's how I'm going to approach this. So I'm going to ring my own bell there. That's my call. How do you see this? I know you're not going to give us a call on this market, John, because it's not appropriate that you do that. But what do you think are the factors to look at in this market?
Well, I would agree with what Garrett was saying. I mean, you've got, you know, the negative approval rating on Palin is something to absolutely focus on. I mean, people go into the, you know, there are voters in Alaska, irrespective of their party affiliation, who are going to go in that polling, who can cast their vote against Sarah Palin, no matter who is running against her. And there are others. Certainly, she'll consolidate a lot of the support on the right as a result of the Trump endorsement, who are going to vote for her no matter what. But this is about, this is all about Sarah Palin. Begich doesn't really have to worry too much about his name recognition, as you said, Jeff, in Alaska. That's not what the game is about. This is about, and think about all the money that's going to be raised nationwide for this race. Not that the race is going to be determined by the both of these candidates. All of these candidates are going to have plenty of money to spend on this race, and they're just not that many voters. You know, we're running out of targets, was said earlier, to put this money on. So, you know, it's going to be a really, and it's going to fluctuate. It's going to be volatile. You can expect there's going to be a lot of attention on this. When there's that much media attention, the media sometimes makes issues where otherwise it wouldn't be an issue. And so they're going to be, this is going to be just a fascinating race to watch. As you guys were saying, there are actually two elections coming up. And the structure of the structure of this primary is such that it's not necessarily going to favor the extremes as you normally see of a particular party. It's going to be in many ways a more rational process by which Don Young's successor is going to be chosen.
Well, the three of us are editors at Luckbox Magazine, and in our election issue, which did a feature story on the Predicted platform back a couple years ago, we talked about the virtues of ranked choice voting and what it can do for democracy. And that's the interest. I think you're going to get a lot of play out of this market because you have to have a majority as the outcome of the vote. And if you don't, it's going to go to the first top four candidates. And then you knock off the bottom candidate and you reassign his vote. The second vote, people go in a polling booth and they rank three voters. That's how this works. And ultimately, they keep on... this vote keeps on going until somebody ends up with a majority. A plurality does not take it. So it's going to be an interesting market to watch. You have my trade, buying Begich in the low 20s, selling him in the high 20s, doing the same thing with Palin from the low 40s to the high 40s. And for those of you who are interested in this market or in Predicted in general, Mike, I think we have a promotion to offer, right?
Well, of course, we're talking about the markets at predictit.org, and we do have a promo code if you're not already trading on Predictit. Just go to predictit.org/promo/TPT20, and if you deposit your first $20, we'll match that first $20. You'll have $40 to get started. You can trade in Alaska markets. You can trade in whatever markets you want. That's predictit.org/promo/TPT20. Deposit 20, you'll have 40 to start with.
Well, thank you, Mike. And John, thank you so much for joining us. I know we're going to ask you to come back sometime as midterms start to heat up a little bit. And we never got around to talking about what's going on in France with Le Pen and Macron, but maybe there's a chance to speak to that as well down the road. But thanks again. We're all big fans of the platform, and you have our money and you have our attention over Predictit. So, keep on developing that technology, and we look forward to your latest evolutions. And thanks again for joining us. Mike, where do we go from here?
We have a couple announcements. First and foremost, next week, our guest is going to be TastyTrade co-founder and co-CEO Tom Sosnoff. And as you know, Jeff, and you know, Garrett, last week we were closing on the new issue of Luckbox Magazine, the energy issue, which will be releasing digitally around April 20th. Jeff, you want to give a little bit more information
sure.
about what that issue is about?
Sure. The energy issue has a story by Garrett about how ESG mandates are affecting some of the opportunities for oil companies, both exploration and development, as well as big oil. We look at a number of different things like carbon capture, nuclear fusion, solar stocks. There's more than 33 specific trading ideas in that issue, including a story about Apple's upcoming electric vehicle that is a rumored project, that it, Project Titan, likely to hit the market pretty soon. So that's the energy issue. It's free over at getluckbox.com/TPT. Subscribers can pick up Luckbox, the award-winning financial publication, at getluckbox.com/TPT. And also, looking forward to Tom Sosnoff. When you talk about legendary traders, he certainly fits the bill, not to mention a pretty extraordinary entrepreneur with two near billion-dollar exits in fintech and financial services. Tom is going to talk to us about prediction markets. It's something he's always been very interested in, has an affinity for what Predicted and others are doing in the prediction markets and with respect to event futures. You know, John, it's interesting. We're looking forward to, your market's going to get a little bit more crowded, and that's good. It's not about, a bigger slice of the pie. It's about growing a bigger pie when you're in an early stage opportunity like prediction markets. And we're looking forward to CME's announcement that sometime in the fall, we're going to be seeing event futures from them on the financial side. I think in the long run, all that does is just bring more new traders to these platforms. So a lot to watch what's going on. And we asked Tom to come and join us next week and talk more about his take. So that's all we have for this episode of The Prediction Trade. If you liked what you heard, you can watch us over on the YouTube, on YouTube in the Tasty Trade channel. Look for us there. We're also live on the Tasty Trade Network Thursdays at 5 o'clock. And of course, we're sponsored by Luckbox Magazine, the award-winning financial publication that's free at getluckbox.com. The prediction trade's in print every issue of Luckbox Magazine. That's a column that Mike Reddy manages. So pick us up. We look forward to seeing you there. Garrett, Mike, John, thank you all very much. We will see you next time. Thank you for joining us. And remember, always wager responsibly, believe in math, master your trade, don't rely on luck, and join us next time on The Prediction Trade. Where do we go?